Good morning. Welcome to our second call, which is all about conflict. This module is bringing up stuff for folks. I've had more emails from you individually over the last few weeks. Hey, Cassie, than I have about anything else. So that's all, and that's all good. And my response is always, that sounds totally understandable, and yes, this brings stuff up for us. And you know, a few of you have said it's the first time you've really thought about your relationship with conflict, and some folks have said, I'm remembering the way that I have handled this with clients in the past. Either there's been a conflict with you and a client, or a client has brought the subject of conflict with someone else to coaching, and now you've sort of gone, oh, I didn't handle that in the best way I could have. And my response is always going to be, you did exactly the best that you could in the moment with what you had, in the way that we all do. And so it's, you know, I think sometimes there is this desire by us as really thoughtful practitioners that we want to get it right. We want to do the right thing. And I would just say, this is not the job for that, right? This work is about doing the best we can with what we have, given the conditions that we are working in and what's going on for us, what's going on for our clients. It's complex work, holding space for another human. And so be gentle with yourself, and just know that we're all on our own paths with this stuff, me included. And, you know, I have a call in a couple of weeks with a private supervision client who is, you know, managing some feedback I gave her in a session, and she wants to talk about that. And there is a conflict between us. And so, you know, I have feelings about that call and our relationship and all of that stuff. And it's like, okay, so this is going to be with us for the duration of our work. So all I would offer is, there's no rush. You know, your relationship with conflict is going to be completely subjective and individual and personal to you. And we don't need to be afraid of it. And I think for a lot of us, we haven't had that modeled, healthy conflict modeled well. And so it brings up all kinds of things. And it's perfect timing, because in this session, we're going to be talking about, you know, how we actually coach around this stuff. What do we do with our clients when they bring, particularly in the context of when they bring a conflict that they are managing in their own lives? How do we support them in the best way? And what I just want to offer is, there's no right way, right? Really do trust your judgment, trust your read of this person. You're going to know the client and what is best for them. What I want to do today is kind of give you a way of sort of checking that understanding and some of the things that I've learned over the years that may support you in terms of how you decide where you want to take things. Yeah. And just, I guess, you know, just to sort of bring this into the reality of, you know, it's nice to have these frameworks and these ideas, and then you've got a warm human being in front of you, and sometimes it's a bit like, shit, what do I do? What do I say? What is the best way? Yeah. So that's what we're gonna talk about today. Let me just get our screen up. So in today's call, we're just gonna, you know, as usual, we'll look at revisit the aims of this module, and really look at clients and coaching around conflict. We're going to do either some self-reflection or coaching, and I've got some ideas for you to take away for practice pods. Yeah. So just to come back to the aims of this module, we want to explore our own relationship with conflict so we can support our clients to explore theirs. We're considering the styles of conflict, the experience of emotions, and tools that we can really help to resource clients, you know, in these kind of the typical contexts where conflict comes up: judgment, criticism, and confrontation. Yeah, giving them choices and options for how they want to both experience those things and respond to them. And I think for us and for the clients, it's really about like listening to what's being said underneath sometimes what's being communicated, which is tricky to do, right? It's tricky to do. And these tools that we're going to talk about today, the practices of reframing and polarities and accountable language that help us to kind of do that, help us to really walk away from conflict, feeling pretty proud of how we've managed it, pretty proud of how we've handled it, that we've honored ourselves, the other person, to whatever extent is appropriate. And, you know, we're okay. Even, and it doesn't mean it has to feel amazing, right? I think that's the sort of the trap we can fall into. Oh, I'll be good at conflict when it doesn't affect me at all. I'll be good at conflict when I feel amazing and I'm totally open to all, any and all conflict. Often that is us kind of bypassing our own experience. And, you know, we get into a state where we're really ignoring what's true. You know, conflict is at the heart of our sense of risk, because it our perception is always the relationship is at risk. I may lose connection here if this goes wrong. So it is fraught with conflict and risk and with emotion and risk. Those are very normal responses. Yeah. What we want to do is help our clients to feel resourced to respond in a way that feels good to them. Yeah. Okay. Hey, Vicky. Nice to see you. Cool. We're just revisiting the aims of the module and we're coming to the juicy bits. You've missed nothing. Okay, cool. So, you know, and I guess, you know, that just to revisit the sort of principle that we're approaching conflict with is, you know, when we have some peace around conflict, when we've sort of got a sense of it and how we can support ourselves, it means that it's so much easier as coaches to show up in a place that is safe for our clients to explore that. When we coach from our healthy adult selves, our clients can feel some trust and some comfort around that. So, you know, for those of you who have been in touch and said, oh, this is bringing stuff up, I'm not sure how I'm responding to clients, all of that jazz. You know, for most of you, I've said, you know, this is an ideal topic to take to supervision, to any kind of support network that you have, to a therapist if it feels, you know, appropriate. But, you know, mostly it's about processing this. You know, it's about figuring out, where have these beliefs about conflict come from, and how can I make different choices now? Yeah. So some of the tools that we've been looking at, and we looked into this last week around the conflict styles and what your predominant conflict style might be, and then how that may leak into conflict when it comes to your coaching clients and supporting them. And remember that the sort of takeaway from the conflict styles conversation is often we have one conflict style that we use in all conflict. It's like, okay, I can sense conflict coming up. Right. Avoid, avoid, avoid. Right. And we put a lot of energy into whatever our style is, our tendency is. Where we want to get to is a sort of central place, which I call the accepting style, where we accept that conflict is inevitable. It's part of human relationships. And each of these different styles has some intelligences and some real strengths that we can lean into. And that can help us to flex, have what we call psychological flexibility, to be able to lean into whatever resource feels good to us. It's only going to feel good if we have a reasonable kind of sort of emotional response to trying things out. And so experimenting in safe relationships where there's high trust helps you to sort of explore different aspects of yourself. So, you know, for example, if you tend to be accommodating of all conflict as a way of trying to diffuse it, then, you know, having some, you know, experiments with a more adversarial style where you actually say what you want can be really fun. And you can do this in relationships where you can say, I'm exploring my conflict style and I'm going to try out being a bit more adversarial. It will be interesting to talk about how that feels for you, right? And that is often a really great way of actually deepening a relationship when you have that safety to be able to have that conversation, right? And we can do this with our clients as well, right? We can say, what if you were more adversarial with me? What would you be saying? What might you ask for in the coaching dynamic that you're not getting right now? Now, that can be kind of edgy to play with as well as a coach. So that's one of a key way to sort of get into the relationship that the client has with conflict. And we've also got this sort of more expanded toolkit, which I talk more about in the module videos and the workbook. So we've got our conflict styles. We also talk about the emotion cycle because emotions are usually high around the place of conflict. It can be super helpful to support clients to actually pause and sort of feel into and name what is the emotion that's coming up. We will often make lots of assumptions about our own feelings and other people's feelings. And so it can be quite useful to look at what's actually there, right? And this is particularly true when there's anger. And I talked last week briefly about the anger iceberg, which the Gottmans talk about, where on the top of the water you see anger, and underneath that is the actual iceberg, which is full of an entire range of emotions. And that can be super helpful as a way of naming, what's underneath the anger. Is there anything else here? So that can be really useful. And when it comes to judgment, we talk about reframing and deep listening, right? Actually listening for the meaning rather than the words. The criticism map is a great way of looking at, expanding into different aspects of the client's sense of self or self-concept. And with compassionate confrontation, we talk about, how to actually have a compassionate confrontation. How to, name your own experience so that you can seek some kind of middle ground with another person. And the key with with this toolkit is that these are ways in for you to kind of play with this with your clients. We're looking at judgment, criticism, and confrontation. These are the kinds of key sort of moments where a client will often bring a context that's related to those things. And these are the ways that I've developed and adapted from different sort of bodies of knowledge around this stuff for working with clients with self-doubt. Because the tendency for clients with self-doubt is to say it's all my fault, or to kind of go into blame. Who's at fault? It's either me or them, and the relationship's at risk. So the actual subject matter gets lost in the self-doubt. What we make it mean gets it gets to be more important than the actual than the actual conflict itself. And you see this out in the world as well, right? I mean, anytime anyone who's a public figure, I mean, goodness, if you're living in the UK right now, you'll be seeing there's public figures who are being asked to account for their behavior. And the first response is defense and blame. Not, let me take that on board and think about it. Let me reflect on that. Oof, that's not a great thing to hear. That's a criticism that goes to the heart of me. Let me think about that and come back with a more thoughtful response. It's defend and blame. And it's because our personhood feels at risk, right? And so this is something that is, part of our human experience. So what I want us to do today, rather than go into the tools themselves, right? Like, because there are videos that take you through those tools and kind of go through that and look at that as you practice with these on in your practice pods with your clients. It's really about kind of trial and error and making this your own. That's all good. What I actually wanted to spend our time on today is how to sort of show up to conversations with clients around conflict, right? And how to get have the best or the most impactful session with different clients. Okay. So I wanted to kind of remind you a little bit of module two. Right. Remember when we were talking about our psychological adult development and how we make sense of our worlds based on how we see ourselves. So there are five kind of principles to take into this, and then what we're going to do is look at how that developmental theory helps us to know where to go with our clients when it comes to conflict. So I've got five principles for you that I think can really help with this. Consent is really key, right? Consent. So you as the coach saying, would you like to explore this conflict, this judgment, this criticism? Would you like to explore this? The reason for this is, you know, and reflecting back to, you know, trauma-informed coaching, if clients have trauma in their biography relating to conflict, that will almost always have been imposed on them. So we want to restore the client to the driver's seat when it comes to looking at this from the here and now. So for me, the first question is always, it sounds like there's some kind of conflict going on. Would you like to explore that? And if they're a bit hesitant, I'll say, you know, I know conflict is pretty tricky for most of us. So I want you to know we can stop at any time. We can pause if you want to take this away and reflect on it. You know, you lead. And I'll just keep checking in. Right, so we're creating some safety for the client to explore this. We want to pay attention to resistance, right? So the survivor self strategies will probably be on high alert around conflict, right? So, you know, and just to kind of give you a sense, these are the five main ones. Denial is usually nothing to do with me, Gov. It's all the other person's fault, right? You know, so you're listening out for that. Is the client in a place where they're denying any responsibility at all, right? Illusions. If only this had never happened, everything would be fine. Or I just want us to get to a place where we can forget this ever happened. I want to agree to disagree. Lovely, noble cloak wearing illusion, right? Is that we're not really kind of looking at the conflict when we're in that place of illusion. Compensation can be, you know, making a joke out of it, talking about something else, getting some kind of payoff from the experience rather than looking at it. Control will often show up in conflict where they want to basically recruit you onto their team. I need to control you as the coach and how you perceive me. So I'm probably not going to tell you what I said or what really happened. What I'm going to do is put myself in the light where our relationship gets preserved so that you agree with me, right? And distraction, you know, let me give you all the information around it, right? Around what happened. Yeah, and so it makes total sense. These are really great, sophisticated ways that we protect ourselves from looking too closely at our own experience. how we feel about it, what responsibility we have, what it means if we have this conversation, you know, all of that, right? So as the coach, we're just paying attention to that resistance. We're just noticing it. Don't, you know, remember that part of the client isn't coachable, but we're noting it. The thing about the actual conflict itself is that the quality of trust in the relationship is crucial, right? So how we, and you know, the sort of any kind of coaching we offer is going to be pretty, you know, much based on, you know, how much trust is in the relationship that the client has with this third party. If it's a stranger on the internet, trust is very low, in which case the conversation is going to be more about, you know, the meaning that the client is making and how they want to best take care of themselves, right? If it's a really good friend, it's something different, right? So that's always a great barometer, right? If the trust of in the relationship is really low, then the outcome where this middle ground met is unlikely. Emotions are always going to be highly likely to be activated, so we want to go slow. We're checking in. We're always offering an out. So that consent keeps being offered. You don't have to over-egg it, but, you know, you're just checking in. If you see someone is kind of distressed, it's like, okay, let's just, there's no rush. There's no rush here. It's going to be, we can work through this. You still want to keep talking about it. In my experience, when safety is high in the coaching relationship, the healthy self of the client is leading and they are processing emotions that are going through in a really healthy way, right? And so we're sort of creating a self-fulfilling prophecy by allowing that safety to be there. Again, just notice your own response. Are you uncomfortable around a client who's quite emotional? Do you want to skip past that or can you be with it? Are you wanting to tie everything up in a nice neat bow when that might be really unlikely? Right, so it's just interesting to notice your own response. Timing is also key. There's no rush. There's no rush in any part of this. Like I said, there's often a kind of perception by our clients and by us often, right? I will be good at conflict when I can respond in the moment in a really articulate and unemotional way and I'm really detached, I'm super zen. That hardly ever happens and it's not necessary. Often, even if we show up super okay with the conflict, if the other person is emotional, they won't hear it anyway. So, you know, I'll often say to clients, you get to process your own experience and then have the conflict when you are pretty regulated, when you're pretty okay with both what might happen as an outcome and, you know, how you're feeling about the experience. You know, repair is almost more likely after a conflict has kind of happened, that repair is most likely to be satisfying for the client if they are in that place where they're feeling quite resourced and regulated. Yeah, not in the heat of the actual conflict itself. All right, let me just pause there. Scott, you've got a question. Go for it. Just know you're muted.
Yeah, thanks, Sass. Just could you...
Oh, I can't hear you, Scott. Is that me or you? Can anyone else hear Scott?
Can anybody hear me?
Must be me. Wait 1 second. Can you speak now?
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, it is me. Sorry, apologies. Go for it.
Yeah, just struggling to understand the illusion part. Could you just... elaborate on that for me and the compensation as well, please, Sassy, if you don't mind.
Sure. So I'm referring back to our third module, which was all about trauma-informed coaching. And what I'm talking about is this part of the client called the survivor self right, it's a part of the psyche that has strategies for avoiding looking at whatever's here. When it comes to conflict, that part of us, that survivor self, will use different strategies, use the strategies in specific ways to avoid really looking at the conflict. Yeah. So the five main survivor strategies are, you know, distraction, control, compensation, illusions, and denial. And they show up in different ways. When it comes to conflict, compensation is really about seeking a moment of escape, like getting compensation outside of the issue. I know it's a little kind of to kind of wrap your brain around, but it's where you're kind of seeking some kind of substitute for the actual connection to your emotions. So it can look like sort of any kind of addictive behavior, like scrolling, gambling, sex, drinking, food, shopping, kind of faux happiness, you know, anything that we do to compensate for having some kind of difficult response, something that we feel uncomfortable around. So it's a way of avoiding. When it comes to conflict, what I see a lot of, because these are often behaviors that take place outside of the coaching context, right? We're unlikely to sort of see the client doing these things in the session. What tends to happen in the session is that the client will make jokes about the conflict, even though we sense, actually, this is quite important to you, or something isn't okay here. The client will probably make jokes about it, or they will somehow kind of seek out some way of avoiding the situation or avoiding the conversation. What I have seen is clients will sort of be trying to do two things at once. So they'll often, even sort of perhaps unconsciously, like there'll be children around, or there'll be, you know, oh, hang on, my phone's gone, or you notice that they're kind of on their keyboards. There's a sort of distraction, some kind of compensation, some way of offloading the experience. And there's usually like, well, you know, I'm doing childcare today. It's like, you could have absolutely rescheduled this so that you have this time, right? So the client is making choices to compensate that that sense of discomfort. Yeah. When it comes to illusions are any kind of escape to some kind of fantasy, right? So we create an illusion so that we don't have to be in the reality of the difficult situation. And, you know, we're actually trained to do this as coaches, right? We're positive thinking, ideal self. These are all illusions. They can be super great tools, but when it's used, like a lot of tools, they can also be kind of things that we use to hurt ourselves. And so if a client is really uncomfortable in conflict, they may use language which is sometimes about the illusion that the conflict never happened, when it plainly has, because that's what we're talking about. Or they will want to talk about some kind of idealized, simple, perfect explanation or outcome. And so what we are doing is allowing the client to feel a little safer in the mess of it, right? There's a conflict, and it's okay, and you're okay, and you can feel what you're feeling, and you can be with it, and I'm here with you, and we can take this as slow as you want, right? So does that help you, Scott, just kind of get a bit more of a sense of how that might show up?
Yeah, I guess so. I, as you were talking there, there were certain things that went through my mind. And I guess in some ways, when there's an element of conflict, I guess self-deprecating behavior,
yep,
can be an example, or or blaming oneself for someone else's behavior and not approaching. Am I on the right lines there? Because it feels right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And look, all I'm saying is just notice this, because a sense of humor can be a fantastic resource in conflict as well, right? It's when we can sort of see, ooh, is that actually resisting it? And there's no formula for this. It's just you're noticing the client, you're sensing into where they're at, and it's a way of helping them to feel safe, right? I can remember, just to sort of share an example of this, because my sense of humor is, you know, if I didn't have that, I don't think I'd be here, right? But I can remember saying to a therapist when I was sort of processing a whole lot of stuff about my relationship with my parents, and we both were like belly laughing at some of the things I had shared. And then she just said to me, I just want you to know you're not responsible for making this funny. And it was like a whoo feeling of, oh my God, I didn't know that that was an option. I didn't know that I had that available to me. She was the first person who said, you know, your sense of humor is a beautiful thing, and it doesn't, you don't need to make this funny if underneath that it's actually not. And so humor and hurt can often coexist together, and all we're doing is allowing the client to kind of feel into where it feels good and giving them that option, right? And it's all because we're helping the client to expand their self-concept, right? So they feel resourced. They can choose how they want to respond to different things.
Yeah. I really get that, because I think for me personally, I've used humor in the past to diffuse a situation. But when I think about it, that may seem a good thing, but also it might mean me running away from a situation by using humor. So that makes a lot
you've
of sense.
You've got it. Yep.
Yeah,
you've got it. That's exactly what happens. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Those of us with trauma in our childhood, we have the darkest sense of humor. Yeah. You can always tell those people. They're my people. Cool. Great question. Thank you, Scott. Brilliant. So let's remind ourselves of these different sort of senses of self, and how we might notice where our clients are at. So you may remember this diagram from module two, right? And these are, it's what we're talking about here is the client's sense making, right? How they make sense of themselves in relationship to others. And it's super relevant because conflict is almost always going to be about our relationship with others, right? So these are three kind of different stages that we go through. Not all of us go through all stages. Most adults will kind of be here or here, right? So they're either forming their self-concept or they have a formed self-concept. And the main difference between these two kind of ways of making meaning is that when our self-concept is forming, it's literally we are kind of working out who we are, and we're getting clues about who we are from other people. So, you know, there's sort of like no barrier between us. That's the main guy there, the little orange guy. There's no barrier between us and the different relationships that we have, right? So we kind of feel quite identified with our relationships. At some point, though, we start to see, I kind of want to stretch out on my own, or I'm maybe outgrowing some people, or I'm moving into different places in my life and my world. I've retrained as a coach and I have this new kind of sense of development, and I want to be around people who are equally like self-reflective. Or I've been through something, divorce, loss of something, travel overseas, anything that really expands you as a person is likely to have you start to think about, well, who am I in all of this? What matters to me? And so we start to kind of transition into a different stage of adulthood, which is the formed self-concept stage. And in this stage, you know, we're pretty clear. There are other people over there, and then there's me. I have my own identity, and I make choices based on that, based on my values, you know, who I know myself to be. You know, there is me, and then there is other people. And we've sort of become a bit more self-authoring, whereas over here, we're sort of written by other people, if you like. There are other stages, and some people get to this place of a reforming self-concept where we recognize that we are lots of different identities, and we're changing and we're growing and we're complex, and we have you know, a lot of paradox and a lot of contradictions in ourselves, and we can hold more complexity, right? So there is complexity at all of these levels. None is better than the other. It's just that as you move through the different stages, you're likely to find it easier to hold different levels of complexity, right? So why does this matter for our clients who are experiencing conflict? Well, for those who have a forming self-concept, which is around about 60% of adults, we want to coach them towards a healthy sense of self, right? Because that is going to give them more resources to be able to manage more complexity. They're likely to be seeking out coaching because they're having some challenges around being very identified with other people. This is 60% of adults, right? So they're likely to present when it comes to conflict, I am my relationships and my identity comes from others, right? So when it comes to conflict, you can imagine that there is an enormous sense of risk around conflict, yeah? So risk is really in the driver's seat. You know, if this relationship ends or this conflict leads to, you know, a dissolution or a change in the relationship, my identity is on the line, is the kind of unconscious process that's at play here. So there's some real challenges in here. And what we're likely to see is the client will have real trouble identifying their own preferences and opinions and ideas, right? All of their ideas come from podcasts they might listen to, right? All of their ideas come from, you know, what their parents believe, what their peer group believes, right? Their opinions, their preferences, their sense of identity is a mishmash of the folks that they allow themselves to be influenced by. They may also find it really challenging to make decisions where there's no clear right choice, right? So, you know, there's an increase in complexity. There's no right choice here. It's just about, you know, muddling through, figuring out what do you want? What do you feel? They may also have a lot of challenges around prioritizing their own needs, right? So when it comes to conflict, for folks with a forming self-concept where they're very heavily identified with different relationships or groups, communities, then when conflict comes up, it can feel like my world is ending. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to cope with all of this, and I don't know what the right thing to do is. So they just feel super at sea. So the best thing we can do is to coach them towards listening to their healthy self, right? Listening to that inner voice, right? When there is no right clear choice, there is no right answer. Very few things in adulthood have a right answer. And they're not quite sure what their preference or opinion or ideas are. You know, our work when it comes to conflict is really about tuning into that. So I wanted to give you some kind of questions that I found super helpful around this, right? So, you know, it's really about being super curious about the client's experience, right? When it comes to conflict, why does this matter? Right? Why does this matter to you? Tell me about what about this matters to you. What are your needs? What are your feelings? Right? We're getting into the client's experience. And you can imagine, right? They may actually have quite a difficult time tuning into that. So we go slow. We're just tuning in. We're reflecting back, letting the client lead. And then kind of going into the conflict itself, well, who gets to decide what's true? Right? Who gets to decide what's true here? Because what they can do really well is make assumptions about what the other person or the other party is thinking and feeling and wanting, right? Based on interpreting that experience. So our questions here, I'm going to come to your question, Vicky, in 1 second. So the questions we're asking here are about allowing the client to just tune in to their own experience, to their own voice, right? What's the cost of letting this person decide what the truth is or what should happen here, right? And what's the risk of not agreeing with their opinion, right? So all we're doing here is just flushing out what is the client's, you know, desire, what's their experience, you know, what are they thinking and feeling about the whole thing? And from there, we can decide, okay, so would it help to look at this further and using this tool, or maybe the answer kind of comes out of these questions? Mostly our clients kind of know what to do. What they don't know is how they are going to cope with the risk. Yeah. I'm just going to pause there for a second. Vicky.
Is it possible to use this where there is a perceived judgment or conflict, but it isn't actually real? Like, a lot of the people that I help, they think they are being judged. They put something out there, or that this is kind of like anticipation of, my peers will think that I'm crap if I put that piece of content out, or if I don't get this result, or if I don't make sales or something. So sometimes the conflict isn't actually a reality that they're facing. It's like something going on in their head. I'm just wondering if that this is relevant here, or like, that's how I feel like mostly this is going to show up with a lot of my clients.
Yeah, so it's the risk of conflict rather than the reality of it.
Yeah.
Right? Fantastic question. And so, yes, you can look at, and you know, what I would suggest is just familiarize yourself with the conflict toolkit and see what, if, you know, if anything can be super helpful here. I would also say that when it comes to like dealing with the risk rather than the reality, the belief buster is a great way to look at that. Yeah. But I think, and I'm with you, and I think, you know, having worked with quite a lot of coaches over the years, I sense, you know, we've had the same experience, right? Where you have clients who are, you know, there's a perception of what might happen, and I'm just trying to avoid that. And so what I have found is the criticism map is actually really good for that, because what I'm doing there is helping the person expand into both the criticism and its opposite, or its polarity. All right. So polarities are just, is the thing that Jung came up with, and it was to try and look at different aspects of our personality. He loved the whole shadow and light thing, right? He was really kind of fetishized it. But it's kind of helpful, because if you go through the list of polarities and you start to say, oh, well, I'm both generous and selfish, right? If I do this, my, you know, the perception is everyone's going to call me selfish. Well, what's the downside of that? Right? What's the upside of it? What's the downside of generous? What's the upside of that? I can see that actually I'm both. I can hold the complexity that I'm both. So if you call me selfish, it's like, yeah, sometimes I can be selfish. Like, there's a sort of claiming of the thing that we fear being criticized by. Right? And I came up with that because a series of questions a therapist asked me once, which was so helpful for me to go, it's kind of neutralized the criticism. I'm going to play with this a bit more. And from that, this criticism map came. And clients have found this really helpful. I've done this in groups as well, where we sort of go through what's the worst thing someone could say about our work, our output, our stuff, ourselves, all of that jazz. And then, you know, taking them through it and seeing people go, oh, I'm going to really own my bossiness, or I'm going to, you know, it's almost like a sense of it's not the worst thing. it's actually a thing that I can see has some real value to me. It is part of me. So so I just offer that. That might be a tool to really look at. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Vicky. Great question. Jane.
Hi. Yeah. This is a slightly left field question, but really hearing you talk about the links between the forming sense of self and how to cope with conflict at that stage in development is really making me curious about the application of this approach to teenage girls with eating disorders.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you know of any research or anybody working in this field, because it seems that it might be a perhaps more helpful approach when you're supporting the development of the young person, the growth of the young person, and supporting them to develop tools and understand themselves, rather than just use CBT to change behaviours.
Yeah, I've got so many feelings about CBT. The short answer to your question is I'm not aware of any research that looks at this stuff specifically. What I would say is there's been a couple of coaches who have come through SBCA who work specifically with teens, who have adapted these tools for working with teens and figuring out, like, you know, what's appropriate, what's not. Because teens are at a different developmental stage as well, but they are still, they're called, well, one of the main researchers in this calls that the socialized self, where we're pretty much like, you know, it's who we socialize with. It's almost like the last thing we hear, that's the thing we adapt as our sense of personality, and it's ever changing as a teenager. So it can be kind of tricky to track, but your sense of self is emerging from this. And actually all the research points to teenagers now are developing a kind of sense of their own self-concept much earlier and able to hold more complexity earlier because our world is more complex and it's demanding that of them. So it wouldn't surprise me if you did some digging that you would find something around conflict tools and, you know, for me, the eating disorder stuff is the same as alcoholism, is the same as, you know, shopping addiction and anything else. It is the compensation for the underlying thing. And if we get to the underlying thing, the compensation no longer feels as necessary. And there are, of course, you know, biophysiological impacts of that, and there are, you know, specific healing modalities and things for all the different addictions. But I would say that's the kind of principle I take this to, is that this can apply to anything, because whatever the addiction is, that's not the thing. That's hiding the thing. That's the thing we do instead of looking at the actual thing. Yeah. So I don't know if that helps you, Jane, but I love the question.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems there might be more useful than CBT, which feels like a sticking plaster. And also anybody who's got pathological demand avoidance is going to struggle with CBT. So all the stuff you're talking about in relation to trauma and going slow really makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, CBT is a fantastic approach in the right context. It's the same as anything. If that's just the, you know, you see everything as a behavioral change option, then everything becomes a nail to the CBT hammer. And it's like, but what happens when that doesn't apply or it doesn't help? And I think, you know, what I'm hoping is this gives you a bit more of a rounded toolkit. Yeah. Cool. Great. Any other questions on the coaching towards the healthy adult self? So just to kind of recap, what we're doing here is we're helping the client to enter into their own world and have a little poke around, right? What is their experience of this particular conflict? And once we get a bit more information, then we've sort of helped them clear their throat, if you like, around what might be going on, so that when you go into maybe using one of the conflict tools, it's about their experience rather than them looking after the other person, or, you know, the only goal they have is the relationship cannot change or end, right? Which actually doesn't happen all that often. Like, the ending is the worst case scenario, and that's where our self-doubt goes. But that will be the main fear for a client who's heavily identified with a relationship where there is conflict. Okay, so when we're looking at the formed self-conflict, that's 30% of adults. So the formed self-concept and conflict is around 30% of adults. They have their own identity, right? There is a sense of this is me and this is not me. So there is a kind of morality, values, a sense of discernment and judgment. There is a sense of this is me, this is not me. And they're usually pretty clear about, you know, who they are. Protection of that self-concept is in the driver's seat. Right. So they want to preserve that sense of self because it's been hard won, right? I've figured out who I am in comparison to other people, you know, don't anyone come and poke around in it, right? So that means that there are some challenges sometimes with navigating the complexity of themselves and other people. What if other people have a different value code or a different morality, right? If you want to know what this looks like, check the comments on any internet page, right? You can't say this. You can't have that opinion. You're wrong because now you're challenging my sense of self, right? There's usually also a challenge around how to build relationships without losing a sense of identity, right? And so what tends to happen is for folks with a formed self-concept, we get into, you know, a bit of an echo chamber. You know, we only hang out with people who value the same things as us, have the same morals, the same, you know, the same things that matter to them matter to us. And then we can all feel very comfortable that we're right, right? Because no one's going to challenge us. And we can see that there are other people who have the wrong opinions and ideas and views, right? And so that means that we don't tend to expand our sense of self either, right? After a while, that can start to maybe feel a little stale. Sometimes it can feel really safe as well, right? So there's no wrong answer here. There can be some challenges about trusting the inner voice because it's all about preserving the sort of sense of who I am and how I identify with other people. So who am I on the inside, right? And how to be heard and honored and seen by other people, right? Usually, you know, we don't want to do anything that will risk, you know, our self-concept being challenged. So often there is a sense of, oh, you know, like Vicky was saying, you know, if my peers or my clients or whatever, if you're working with business owners, there will be a sense of, I've got to still say the right thing. I've got to be on brand. You know, always a little bit about on brand. You can be off brand, see what happens, right? So in this, with these clients, what we're actually helping them to do, because if these challenges are there, then the best way to coach around conflict is to help their self-concept to expand, right? To help be more comfortable in the complexity, in the conflict. And this is, by the way, I think most coaches would have a formed self-concept. You know, we've done some bloody work, right? And we've reflected on who we are and how we're different from other people. And we have usually have quite a decent sense of self. So most of us are here, I would say, in most contexts of our world. So how do we coach someone else to expand their self-concept? And remember, we can't make development happen, right? All we can do is sort of plant some seeds and see what grows, right? See what the client is willing to kind of water. So some questions to ask for someone who is in conflict and has a pretty formed self-concept, like, what do you believe to be true about you? And what is at risk if you allow yourself to consider the advantage of someone else who's opposing, has an opposing view? What's at risk if you just see that someone else might have a good point, but it's the opposite to yours? Because that is actually inviting you to say, what's the strength of someone else's opinion and sort of the weakness or the challenge to mine? Right? How are they right and I'm wrong? And what's at risk if I allow myself to consider the disadvantages of my perspective? Right? It's another way of looking at it. If my first response is to blame, defend and blame, what are the disadvantages of that? If in conflict, I need someone else to change for me to be happy, what are the disadvantages of that? And a really great question to ask is, what can you safely integrate some judgment, some criticism? Like, how do you safely integrate? And integration doesn't mean agreeing, right? It just means, you see this differently, or you see me differently, and can I be okay with that? You know, is there anything in that for me? You know? Maybe there isn't, in which case, you know, how do we safely kind of go, okay, cool, that happened. How do I want to move on? How do I want to take care of myself? Without, you know, making the other person wrong, without ending the connection, all of that, you know? Like, can I expand my self-concept and the relationship to hold criticism and judgment? When it's, you know, often, if there's high trust, it's meant, you know, with a lot of care and love. Sorry. So we're coaching the self-concept to expand. Any thoughts, questions, ideas that come from that? Yeah, Anka. Looking very comfortable over there.
Yeah, I'm sick, so I'm hanging out here. So one thing coming to my mind is that basically, as patients in terms of our health, like, I see my patients always being in this part, like, everybody knows how their life has to be, how they're, that they need their coffee, that they need their sugar, that they need their not moving much, or that we have so many ideas formed around it. Like, it just helped me to get a bridge into this kind of, where I'm myself, I'm sick right now, you know, I'm rigid about change in areas that make me sick. So it's kind of very interesting to relate from the inside, from the perspective of what we think we should have in our life in order to our life be well, and how rigid we are against changes on the right and the left. It's kind of, was just helpful thinking to me.
I think that if I can expand on what you're saying, Anka, to just think about conflict with authority, right? When you have a medical professional, can I just share my latest, this is my marvelous big pocket guide to heart failure, something that I live with. And it is the most patronizing, shitty document you've ever seen, right? And so it makes me just want to dismiss the whole thing. But it's that thing, right, of, hang on, this is a conflict I have with authority, right? So am I rebelling because it annoys me, like the wording annoys me and it feels patronizing, or is there anything in there that's useful to me? And so it's that kind of thing of, you know, can you honor your own experience? So think about this from the perspective of a client who belongs to any kind of marginalized group, right? And where the norm is kind of given as that's the standard, and you already aren't in that group because you actually belong to a different group. But there is a conflict often, or it's a kind of contrived or created conflict, right? And so how do we support our clients to navigate that part of it is about, okay, what is your experience here? And is there anything in what the other party is saying that's helpful to you or feels like I'm begrudgingly listening because I know actually it serves me, even if the words are wrong or it's presented in a way that really annoys me. Sometimes it's just, no, this is just not for me. And I'm dismissing this idea or this opinion. Yeah, I'm good.
Just on that point, like with my patients, I often have the role to inform them that what they are doing actually is counterproductive to their well-being, but full permission to keep going the way they do, exactly how you are teaching us, you know. Are you experiencing the risk already? Do you want to stay there or do you want to move on, you know? And being in the, like, I have also heart problems. I have, like, heart palpitation and so, because I'm always doing too much, but I like doing a lot, you know, like, kind of like, okay, I'm already experiencing the risk. How do I now? And that's also what my very first therapist said. She said, like, maturity is if we do what other people have told us to do because we know it's good for me, because we want to do it. And that's, I have to grow out of the thinking that I don't want to do it because they said I should do it. That's why I don't want to do it. But to actually open to the point that actually I feel that is actually a very good idea, but how can I do it though they said so? So I have to grow in the place to fully from the inside feel the point. I want to do it because I need it. My body tells me I need it. And I think my thinking tells me it's the best thing to do. And I don't care that other people said so too. So because I grow, like the healthy cells can fill me from the inside with the inside, from the inside with the inside, that's actually what I want to do.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it is just coaching our clients to, like, your voice is really worth listening to here, you know, and then you get to decide what you want to do. But often what we do is we just respond because we're responding out of that dysregulated, oh, the risk is really high. What I've got to do is make sure nothing happens to this relationship because of the conflict. But we're not pausing and going, yeah, but what do I actually want here? Like, why does this even matter to me? What do I care about? What's my experience of this? The more that we do that and encourage our clients to do that, the more it becomes like the default first step. Let me check in with myself here. You know, and honestly, it was actually in, you know, really kind of getting a grip on my own relationship to conflict that helped me see this is a gateway, right? Like the thing that I thought was the worst thing is actually a gateway into something really helpful and important and, you know, is growing and expanding me in the best way. And it's like, oh shit, maybe all the things I thought were really hard and difficult are actually the things that will, you know, support me to become who I want to be or imagine myself to maybe become, you know. So yeah. Anyone else got thoughts coming up? Maybe about your clients, about yourself. A lot to think about. Yeah, Scott.
Just to, I guess, a little bit of clarification, really. I must admit, when I did read module two, I struggled a little bit. Yeah. But I think it's coming a lot clearer to me now. And when I think what really resonated with me then when you were going through that was I started thinking about my own relationship with my own family. And as a youngster growing up, it really was important for me, especially on my mom's side of the family. My mom and dad, they got divorced, but on my mom's side of the family, they were quite domineering, but they were very strong characters. And I guess it was a forming concept because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be part of the tribe. So all the things that I really wanted to do and wanted to achieve. I was reticent to discuss those things with them because of ridicule, judgment, and so I never really did.
Yeah.
And so I guess that was part of a forming self-concept. Would you agree? Yeah.
Totally. You know, you're reminding me of lots of clients that I've worked with over the years who have come because they want to find their purpose, right? Oh, work isn't thrilling me and I want to find my purpose. And as we start to explore, well, what made you decide this in the first place? That you start to realize, oh, this is all about the forming self-concept of wanting to honor your parents' dreams, their goals, the things that mattered to them. And we ask young people to make kind of, you know, pretty life-altering decisions at a really young age when they're still under the influence of a ton of people and they don't really know what they want, you know. And somehow it works out. Like, most of us will figure something out and we may change and all of that stuff. But it's always been quite interesting to me to see what happens when folks get to their, often their 30s. That seems to be a kind of key time where they've sort of spent a number of years probably either educating or upskilling themselves, and then they realize, oh, this isn't doing it for me. And then, oh, I think I chose the wrong job because I was trying to keep someone else happy. And what are the consequences, or the, what's the conflict I may cause if I choose something different? Which makes my heart sing, but my parents didn't even, that wasn't even a job when they were growing up. So they don't even know what this is that I do, right? And can't get their head around it. And so there's conflict. Is that safe? Will you be able to be, you know, be secure? All that jazz. So there's a kind of, I think for a lot of people, they will seek out a coach to help them make sense of that. Often when folks are coming to look at, you know, a kind of purpose conversation, they're also needing some conflict management skills, because the reason they haven't just gone off and pursued that, the reason they're pausing and going, oh, is this okay? Can I do this? Questioning themselves is because of what might happen if. Yeah. And you may find this if you work with other practitioners, if you work with coaches, I know you do, Vicky, and Cassie, with your work around, you know, supporting professionals in your industry, you may find that actually that these tools come in super handy in ways where it's, you know, it's almost like a sideways kind of conversation where you start to see that the real risk, or the reason they're not taking action on the thing, is because of the fear of some sort of conflict.
Yeah. And as you were talking as well, I was wondering to myself that is partly the reason for me having, I wouldn't show this in this particular environment, but for those who probably know me, probably think I've got an element of a wacky sense of humour. And I found humour as a real comfort in many ways, of kind of like tuning out, zoning out, and not having to face a certain reality. And I'm just wondering if that's where humour has helped me to kind of mitigate my relationship with conflict.
Yeah, totally, Scott. It makes so much sense. And I think the thing is, right, is to not then make yourself wrong about it, right? To get into that all or nothing thing of, you know, well, I've got to let that go. That your humour is an enormous resource, right? And it's worth reflecting on. And, oh, I used humour rather than talk about how I really feel there. What could I do different next time? Maybe I could play with just saying, I don't want to do that, or, nah, that's not for me. You know, and it's amazing how simple sometimes our response can be, rather than all the energy that we put into avoiding the thing. Yeah. And I honestly think You know, and Vicky, you make such a great point in the chat here that conflict can also mean like your mum saying, don't do that, or your friend saying, why would you leave that job, right? That can be a perception of judgment, criticism. And what it really is sometimes projection from that person of, well, I would never do that, so I can't understand why you would, right? So now you're separating yourself from me and I don't like it. And it can also be, I'm frightened for you. Like, I'm going to give you the voice of risk, because if you really thought about this, you know, and of course, for anyone who's been in that position where they are kind of going through a career change or whatever, it's like, it's all a bloody think about is what could go wrong, right? So part of this, I think, is about, you know, coming back to the client's experience again. Like, you know, there's no wrong way to respond to conflict, right? We just do what we do. What we want to do as coaches is give people more choices, so that they can walk away from the conflict going, that was kind of different, but I still flexed into another part of me, and oh, that's nice to know I can do that too.
Yeah, because I just trying to think, if you're trying to change job, or like a lot of my clients are trying to make that leap or go into something they feel really passionate about, that the avoidance and self, you know, people pleasing kind of just kicks in of, oh, I'll just carry on doing the same old job and I won't do that, because there is potential to have a tough conversation with someone in their life to say, I'm actually off to go and do this now, and they're trying to avoid that, which means they're holding themselves back completely and utterly,
when actually we could take a leaf out of Scott's book and go, oh mum, well, I may as well just bloody give up now then, you know, passive aggressive kind of response, you know. You know, it's like, oh, what's the point of even trying then, kind of thing. You know, it's like we can sometimes just use that humor as a way of diffusing the thing. There's no wrong way, right? It's but exactly what you're describing. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that the thing to also just be aware of is that often we are not coaching about conflict with our clients, because they're doing a hell of a lot of work to avoid that. So what we want to do is say, this feels like some potential conflict here. So how do we explore that? And then what do we want to do?
I think that's why when I saw the module, I was like, well, I think this is completely irrelevant. And obviously now we're going into, I was like, I don't work with anyone in an office where they're having an argument with their manager. But actually now when I look at it and like what conflict looks like in so many different ways, actually that huge just avoidance of, I don't want a situation where there's conflict, is actually highly prevalent in the work I do.
Appreciate you sticking around, Mickey. Really cool. Really cool. Yeah.
Well, I really like the connect. No, sorry.
Sorry, Irina, go for it.
Just continuation of what Vicky said also, because I thought, okay, how is it connected, you know, with the whole model and everything. But I also love how you connected with the self concept. It's really beautiful, yeah. It really makes sense.
Exactly, yeah. Cool. Oh, that's good. I love that you're trusting that I do kind of have a method to my madness, yeah. Brilliant, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so just on this, I just had this insight, like what you said, you both said, Vicky and Irina, like that the moment where we move out of the first, the forming self-concept as a person into the next, we are already separating from some people. And then like if we move again, like we have moved up in the job, for example, and now we are maybe thinking of going self-employed or not, or partially, we are moving in the third. And again, we have to risk losing a lot of people, which we will do. There will be always people who say, don't do it, no bad and stuff. But also we have a chance to find the people who are also doing that, who also have moved out. And like we are all here. We have a community of people who are agreeing that we all have self-doubt, and that's okay. And that we can make a thing out of it, helping other people with self-doubt. So it's kind of, I love like how you just pointed out here, this one session, this whole development from the first into the last, while knowing that there is always not just the risk, but the reality of losing people, but winning others. Yes, and the winning others is kind of the carrot in front of the nose.
Yeah, and it's uncertain. There's no guarantee, right? And there may be, I mean, my experience of this was a few years of quite a lot of loneliness, where I was like, where the hell are my people? Because they're not here, right? And oh, I've got to go find them. And that's awkward because I haven't quite incorporated this identity of a self-employed person, and I still don't really know what coaching actually is. So it all just felt really bloody awkward for a while, you know? Yeah. But, you know, Vicky, I think that there is a real gap in business coaches or people who work with practitioners talking about this, talking about the identity shift. I don't see that conversation happening really in very many places. And it can often be a really helpful way of talking about the self-doubt. So just
because, like, often people say to me, well, what does the transition look like? And I suppose there's kind of the practical things of what might happen, you know, slowly, you know, stepping away from your job or taking on a part-time or doing something side by side and side hustling. But then there's the identity shift of saying, I am now a coach, I am now a nutritional therapist, I am now this, and using that as who you are. And that encompasses everything we're talking about here, all the things that you think might happen when you step into that new identity.
Yeah. And as Anka's so rightly saying, you know, the reality is that you probably will lose people. Nobody really talks about that growth will often involve some relationships ending. And when we are heavily identified with those relationships, it feels like our world is ending. But actually, you know, exactly what you're saying, Jane, there is some real like freedom, and you get to meet people who are matching where you are in this new identity. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
Just one last idea on this. Like, basically says what that you have stepped out into the uncertainty and loneliness of like going through the jungle, making this pathway by finding this method has helped us to just go to you and have a community. We don't have to be alone. We don't have to feel at loss of methods and validity and all this stuff. And so again, like in the same way, Vicky's clients or other people's clients might really benefit from a mastermind group, which is another offering where we can again create the safety of a new community for the people who want to move but they don't dare to step out on their own. And I think that's a big part of the self-doubt, understanding how you present it, you know, that we can take risk away by offering something that then pays us again.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, don't forget, like, I'm learning on the back of, you know, witnessing my mum having, you know, her women's group meeting in the 80s. Bloody hell. There was a lot of cask wine, right? But, you know, and seeing what it's like when you get people together and they have a conversation, right? There were no worksheets, right? And no one was in charge. And it was the most nurturing place. And I think that's the thing that we can sometimes forget as coaches is, humans have always met in groups. We've tried to find like-minded souls to say, you know, is this okay? Am I okay? Do you see me? And if we can do that as coaches with some extra skills, the value of that to our people is so insanely helpful. And I'm actually seeing more and more coaches who, yeah, there are no worksheets, right? Who actually, you know, I think this is, for me, a real sign of our industry maturing and us being a bit braver is when we are willing to say, let's get a small group of people together and have some conversations. You know, where you don't have to, you know, and honestly, I think that's probably what I'm trying to do in self-belief school, where when I'm working with muggles, it's like I actually discourage people from going too much into the lessons and stuff. Like, just come along to a couple of conversations and see if this feels good to you, and then, you know, if wherever is useful. But it's the connection that we actually are longing for, because that helps us to navigate conflict and our self-concept and all of those things. Yeah. I just want to come back to Cassie, your comment, because I didn't address that, and I just want to make sure I do. I'm reflecting on a situation I have coming up with my parents, and they're my conflict styles. Yeah, and just how you can use that awareness to navigate it. I think that's the thing, man, right? Oh, my parents have a totally different way of managing conflict. Yeah, I love that. That's helping you feel more resourced.
I'm not sure yet how I'm going to handle it, but I know that, yeah, it's making me realise that the whole situation will have conflicts to it. It's a, my mum basically hoards clothes and my dad's had enough and he wants to clear out the house.
Right.
I'm going home in November to finally try and tackle it, but he's very passive aggressive about it. He will go around and find the 25 pairs of jeans and stack them up and leave them on the bed. And yeah. Then my mum is completely in avoidance. And then I'm accommodating. So, yeah, I know it's going to be a tricky situation. It's now making me reflect, oh, yeah, how am I best going to try and help get through this situation?
Sounds like it would make a great Radio 4 play, you know, like one of those 90-minute plays where all the interactions.
Yeah.
You can, and I'd make that joke, but I would really encourage you to think about that. Like if you watch soap operas or dramas of any kind, like notice the conflict styles of the different characters. It can be quite fascinating to kind of go, ooh, that's interesting, right? How the Kardashians are great for this, by the way, if you need an excuse to watch that, just saying.
But it's just that of taking the humour too far, as my dad would do, which then makes my mum just run away and hide even more. Yeah.
Good luck, as Vicky says. So what I'm hoping is that this is helping you it sounds like it's helping you put some pieces together, like, you know, of the developmental stages, but also you know, where conflict may hide, you know, or disguise itself, where it might not be direct, it might actually be the fear of conflict, and then we can kind of explore what isn't happening with our clients. But my kind of number one recommendation is to, you know, just familiarize yourself with the tools, get a sense of, you know, what's useful about this for me, for my clients. What I want to practice, get, you know, over the next few weeks, months, so that you just get a sense of, you know, what's I can incorporate and start to play with climate. Yeah, Jane.
Oh, just a quickie, really. I'm just thinking. You haven't touched on reforming self-concept, and presumably that's because in that stage of development, if one can better hold complexity, one is more likely to naturally be in the accepting stage. Yes,
exactly that. Mm. And around about, well, I mean, this is changing all the times, and I kind of don't like, you know, vast generalizations, but less than 10% of us, maybe 5% of us, get to that where we're wholly living from that that stage. There is some argument that there's also a transforming state. And I just think at some point it becomes kind of pointless, right? But I think these two are most likely going to be where our clients sit. Once you get to that, yeah, as Jane says, that ability to just hold more complexity, paradox, contradiction, conflict is a natural part of that. And you kind of start feeling a little less attached to what it means about you. So it becomes a bit more of a sort of easier to manage phenomena, if you like. Yeah. But almost all of our clients are going to fit within those two stages. So that's why we focus there. Yeah. Cool. Just one final note before we stop. Study group is this Thursday. And apologies to anyone who came last week. There was a total miscommunication between me and Scott. And it didn't help that, so we didn't have study group, but I thought we did. And we're also changing the online calendar. So I believe a note went out last week about the change in the calendar, but I will double check that because I haven't had a chance to yet. But what I would highly recommend you do is subscribe to the online calendar that's in the learning site, because that has updated everything and it has the Zoom links in it. So it means it populates your online calendar. If you use Google or iCal, it will automatically populate it, and then you've got the information where you need it. So my hope is that that's a bit easier. And yes, it is, Jane. we are looking into that. It is a little trickier. But yes, I know Kay is looking at that now, look as well. And there is one other, I can't remember what she called it, but yes. So yeah, and if you don't have Google or iCal at the moment, like Jane, then the best way is to probably just use the learning site calendar as your port of call. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, cool. Thanks for your patience on that. It's an absolute nightmare to sort out.
I have one question about the practice calls with Scott. If there is any possibility, of course, it's too late maybe to have like an extra call, at least maybe half an hour to check in on Thursdays, for example, whenever he is available. Because for me, Thursday just messily doesn't work at 6 p.m. my time.
Right.
And I basically joined only once. And I was also wondering if it affects the certification rules, the practice spot with Scott.
It doesn't, no. That's entirely optional. So, you know, you can go to as many as you can make or as few. And I know sometimes the times just don't quite land for people. We do our best to kind of make them, you know, available so you can manage it. But yeah, there is no impact on your certification from the practice spots. That doesn't count.
Okay.
And just a note on attending calls. Thanks, Vicky. Yes. It doesn't include watching replays. However, there is an expectation that people will try and make these calls as much as possible. However, we also recognise that because of the ICF, don't deal with them unless you have to, who, you know, accredit this program, they've taken so long to get back to us around the accreditation criteria and updating our thing because they've updated all of their things. So we'll make an exception to this class so that, you know, I think within the certification criteria, you have the opportunity to sort of show your learning, and that's the important part. As you can see, I mean, coming to the calls, I think it's, you know, it's where the juicy bits come up, you know. So the sort of intention is always that folks are at the calls, but also we don't want to penalize you for not knowing that was necessary. So there will be an exception made, and we'll make sure that gets communicated to you all. So please don't panic about that. And, you know, always know, you know, I'm not officious, and I'm not interested in making it hard for you. If anything, it's complete bloody opposite of that, which has got me in trouble with ICF. So but anyway, so please know, if you want to go through the certification process, we're absolutely here for it. You'll get all the support you need. Please don't panic about any of that. Yeah. All right. Okay, my loves, take care of yourselves. We are going to have a break next week because I'm going on holiday. And then we'll be back with Module 9 and 10, which will be ACE. One thing to know about Module 9, there's lots of tools in there. Lots of tools. Again, don't panic, right? Just read through it, see what feels good to you, play with it. The idea is that you start to get a sense of, oh, this is now moving into how do we build these healthy self resources, right? And we'll talk loads more when we get back. Okay. All right. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you soon. Okay. Bye. Bye.